Welcome to the Balanced Wellness Solutions Podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Courtney Ciccoletti, your pharmacist turned functional medicine practitioner and integrative nutrition health coach. I'm on a mission to help others find alternative solutions to the chronic issues that far too often consume our lives. Balance is an individual journey that looks different for everyone. So on this show, I sit down with other leaders in the wellness space to discuss ways you can achieve it. We tackle topics like recovering from chronic illness, developing habits to improve mental health, and even how natural remedies like CBD can help aid in the healing process. It's time to find a solution to balance your wellness. Welcome back, everyone. Today I am here with Dr. Ben Thompson. Dr. Ben is a licensed audiologist and the founder of Treble Health, a nationwide private practice specializing in tinnitus and hearing loss. After completing his residency at UCSF Medical Center, Dr. Ben became one of the first to blend evidence-based audiology with digital care, providing personalized sound therapy and cognitive strategies to thousands of patients remotely. Welcome, Dr. Ben. How are you today?
Thank you, Dr. Courtney. Glad to be here. Doing very well.
Awesome. Awesome. So first, before we get started talking about this awesome topic, because it fascinates me, I have so many patients. I've experienced it at times myself. Tinnitus. How do you pronounce it?
Yeah, most of the world pronounces it tinnitus. However, most doctors in the audiology, ear, nose, and throat field pronounce it tinnitus. So many patients come to us and they say, yeah, I have this tinnitus, and sometimes they hear tinnitus. Either can work, but for the rest of our talk here, I'll say tinnitus, where most people who get treatment for this condition or really have it, they end up saying tinnitus, yes.
Because they know what it is after they're diving that much into it.
Exactly. Exactly. And I'm really glad to speak with you because, you know, as a clinical pharmacist yourself and having that training and knowledge, there are these very subtle changes to the system through medications, through supplements that sometimes can affect the ears, whether it's hearing loss or tinnitus. So really excited to hear your perspective on a few of these things.
Absolutely. And I'm so excited to dive in because to me, it's fascinating when I see people presenting and it's the origin. It's, you know, what is causing this? We see people that, oh, I just got back from a trip in the mountains and I have it. And oh, here we are 3 years later and I still have this whistling, whirling in my ear. And I don't know, was it an altitude change? Am I lacking in something? Do I have too much of something? So basically, what causes, you know, tinnitus? Where do you find in your practice, are you seeing is the origin? Like so many people have it, where does it come from?
Yeah. The best framework that I've discovered in my years specializing in this around the root causes of tinnitus, break down most root causes into three groups. One is hearing loss. The second is stress on the central nervous system. And the third is somatosensory conditions related to the jaw or the neck. Wow. So those are the three main areas that create ringing, hissing, buzzing in the ears. And there was a colleague of mine, an ENT physician in Germany, who ran a clinical trial in his clinic of about 100 patients, and he diagnosed them from his years of experience in tinnitus, basically saying about 80% of patients with tinnitus had root causes that were one of those three primary areas. So for most people, that does explain what's going on. There are some other potential causes like medications or like certain ear diseases. And then those make up for about 90 or 95% of cases. So if there's one thing I want to communicate with this, it's that sometimes people say, oh, there's so many causes of tinnitus. How could I ever find out what's causing mine? Or the doctor would say, oh, there's so many causes. But actually, it's really just five or so. It's the hearing loss, stress in the central nervous system, neck or jaw, medications, and then certain ear diseases like Meniere's disease.
That's so fascinating. And I feel with my patients, when I move the needle and we start to see it kind of fade out, and I can't say that I've ever quote unquote cured anybody, But when I see people that are okay, yeah, I feel like I have an improvement. I don't notice it as much, or it's not as loud, or what. It seems like these are the people that were going through like heavier detox from like heavy metals. A lot of times, these very same patients are the patients that have a very high stress load on their bodies. So, I mean, I guess who doesn't have a high stress load in these days, right? I feel like everybody has stress levels to one extent or another. And you know, when you talk about from a stress point of view, where is the origin? Is this kind of like vagus nerve? Is it kind of like that's kind of where it's connected? The vagus nerve is like right there by the ear. Is it like where, when we talk anxiety, is it an inflammation thing? Like where does it, why would anxiety worsen this condition?
Yeah, great question. Stress is linked to tinnitus. It can either be a part of the formation of tinnitus or the cause, or it can be part of a spike or a fluctuation of making it worse. So, for those who already have tinnitus, they know, hey, there was financial stress, political stress, personal stress, family matters stress that makes their 4 out of 10 tinnitus jump up to a 6 out of 10. That typically calms down in hours or days. Separate from that, there's, why did tinnitus start? Could the root cause be related to stress? I want to walk through a very common situation, which is someone in their 60s develops tinnitus and they get a hearing test. And the hearing test shows, okay, Mr. Smith, the high-pitched sounds of your hearing system, they're not what they used to be. So you actually do have some documented hearing loss on the hearing test. It would A lot of people make the mistake of saying, okay, I have tinnitus because of hearing loss, and that's it. That's half the truth, because for many people, they had a slow progressive hearing loss over years, but then they developed tinnitus suddenly within a matter of weeks or months. And it became really bothersome. So it's progressive hearing loss plus stress that is a very common cause of tinnitus for many patients. So we can treat tinnitus by addressing hearing loss, and we can also treat tinnitus by addressing stress on the nervous system. And that's where tinnitus treatment is the most effective for that very common, type of patient.
That makes sense. So I have two patients in particular that I'm thinking of right now that I know their situation when it started and like how it progresses. And the first one that I'm thinking of was a 60-year-old male at the time, probably about maybe 5 years ago, it started, and somebody who works around heavy machinery. So right there, I would imagine that would take a toll over the years. Was away on a trip in the cold in the mountains, developed it there, and it never went away. So it's been about 5 years. Stress definitely activates it more, you know, to the point where it's almost like unbearable under high stress levels. But like, could this just have been activated by something like, again, I've gone through this a bunch of times of like, hey, what are the different things that we're thinking of that could have possibly caused it? Why did it get activated at that very moment in time? And like, you know, what would your opinion on that be? Okay, we're seeing like you said, 60 years old, other lifestyle factors, hearing loss that's just happening over time as we age, whatever the case may be. Like, what would activate it in a sense of at that given moment and then never go away?
Yeah, great question. So the how or the mechanism of how stress causes tinnitus. An interesting point here is that it's not just stress that day or random events of stress, but it's actually sort of compounding stress. So it's important to ask when understanding the case history for our patients is, did your life experience a high degree of disorder or stress in the 3 to 6 months leading up to when this started? So even though your patient there was on a trip in the mountains, logically it makes sense for us to go, okay, was it the altitude change? Was it the temperature? You know, what did you eat? What did you like? However, it might just be random that it happened then. It might actually be something that in the last 3 months, 6 months, when we ask them, patients often say, yeah, you know what? You're right. My mom died and I was going through a lot of stress dealing with my family and the emotions of that. You'd be surprised, a majority of patients immediately say, yeah, actually, I have been going through a lot in the months leading up to this. The actual mechanism in terms of between the auditory brain and the cochlea, the hearing organ. So there's research in the 1950s or 1960s that took 100 normal hearing adults into a quiet room, very quiet room, like a soundproof room. And they said, okay, listen for sounds. Let us know what you hear at the end. And 90% of them came out saying, I heard ringing, I heard hissing, I heard electrical noise, but there was no sound in the room. It was completely quiet. So our own nervous system, our own brain has this low-level buzzy charge or electrical brain noise that it makes when it's quiet enough. So there is the presence of that in the auditory brain. And if for those who are watching on video, I'm like moving the fingers of one of my hands to represent like the neurons being activated there. But in a normal system, there's a part of our brain that's called the limbic system, which is constantly analyzing for what stimulus in our environment is important. And important typically means it's really good or it's really bad. It's amazing. We see it, we know it, we address it, or more importantly, it's potential. This sound is potentially a threat. It's potentially a danger. It's an unknown. It's something that I should be worried about. Through evolution, we're designed to stay alert to things that could put us in danger and potentially, harm us or kill us. So we're monitoring sounds. Sometimes the through stress, what happens is there's a filter mechanism which in a normal system suppresses that sound. So people don't hear tinnitus, or only in a very quiet place will they hear a ringing sound, or only after a concert will they hear it. But their brain can suppress that sound because it's just not important. Doesn't mean anything. But when someone's going through stress, this filter can weaken. We're on edge. Life's hard. We're easier to get triggered with things. And then the brain latches on to that electrical noise in the brain. The filter weakens and the sound itself gets more intrusive, louder, more bothersome. And then it can start this cycle of no doctors are helping me. I go online. I hear there's no cure. I went to an ENT doctor who unfortunately did not give me that much help. They just told me there's no cure for it and I have to get used to it. That creates more anxiety and stress, insomnia. So that's a very common path for how these symptoms cascade into becoming a real problem.
That's super interesting. And then when it comes down to, I mean, and even to back up a second, even what we were talking before we started recording, my own experience with it, I never really would ever have said, oh, I have a diagnosis. But when I ever notice that I have it, it's in one ear and it's in the morning when it's like quiet. I'm just having my coffee. There's no noise, there's no sound. But if you were to ask me randomly during the day, I would never say, oh, yeah, I have that ringing in my ear at all. So, that's fascinating. So when it comes down to like structural, when we're talking about the jaw, explain that. How does that affect it?
There's a nerve in part of the there's a system of cranial nerves or nerves that connect through the head, and one of them is called the trigeminal nerve, and the trigeminal nerve gets inputs from the jaw, the TMJ area, as well as the upper neck, cervical spine, and the way that those nerves run through the system is that they can influence the auditory nerve. So someone can have TMJ problems and they hear tinnitus.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's pretty interesting. And I guess that has to also do is maybe if somebody, what if they were to have any kind of neck disorder or even posture? You know, we're always all looking down at our phones and our necks are down. Does that have anything to do with it as well?
It can. Yeah. So certain symptoms of tinnitus, like if the patient says, One day I randomly woke up and there was this screaming, hissing sound in one ear, and I got a hearing test and my hearing's totally normal. And the hissing sound in the one ear, it fluctuates. Some days it's really loud, some days I don't hear it at all. That's a textbook case of potentially a somatic or somatosensory issue related to the jaw or the neck. So going to a tinnitus specialist who can, like, me and our team, for example, we understand that context so that we can then say, okay, here's what you need to do for your tinnitus. And simultaneously, we want to explore an evaluation of the physical systems to make sure we're not missing something there.
And I guess that would totally relate to like teeth grinding too, which I guess could circle, come full circle and be stress, right? So if we're talking about stress and anxiety and TMJ, like I guess that could all be come together if people are grinding their teeth in their sleep. That would, I mean, that sounds like it would 100% affect that, right?
Yeah, sometimes these different systems can influence each other. Stress leads to tinnitus leads to anxiety leads to insomnia leads to more stress. So they certainly, and teeth grinding, TMJ, they certainly all can be related. Yeah.
So tell me about Treble Health.
I would love to. Treble Health is a practice, a health practice that I started back in 2020. In the last 5.5 years, we've grown a YouTube channel to over 150,000 subscribers focused on tinnitus. And we've this year opened 3 clinics in San Francisco, South Florida, and North Carolina, and more to come. So what we do is we help tinnitus patients. So we provide a treatment. And we do that with various tools and techniques. But really, the goal for us working with patients is understanding what degree of tinnitus they have and doing everything we can to reduce it over time. So, yeah, we've seen over 2,500 patients through a comprehensive tinnitus treatment program. We have a team of 10 doctors, 10 audiologists like myself who specialize in tinnitus. So, this has been my labor of love, and we've helped a lot of people, and hearing back from people that, their lives have changed, and sometimes they can go from near suicidal to back to living a normal life because the sound is much better managed. And that's what keeps me going.
Wow, that's pretty cool. What you mentioned before in one of the five causes, you talked about medications. What are some of like the main medications that you see? And this is the pharmacist coming out in me,
Yep.
because I've never in my 20-year practice as a pharmacist, never have I related. And obviously, patients wouldn't come to me in the pharmacy and say about ringing in the ear. To me, I never really had people come and ask me. But in general, like what medications do you see that are, primarily the ones that lead to this, that are causing people these issues?
Yeah. Yeah, so there's two. I think there's a group which is more everyday medications where if they're taken in excess, we should know that. And then there's medications for more serious medical conditions. So in the first group, high doses of aspirin are considered ototoxic. Ototoxic means odo refers to the ear, toxic, toxicity, so bad for the ear. Certain high amounts of drugs like aspirin. That's an over-the-counter medication where if someone's not educated on it, they could be taking a lot of it for their pain, et cetera. But then they develop this ringing. That specific condition can actually reverse very quickly once the person stops taking, gets the aspirin out of their system. There's a few others, but yeah, the second group would be more serious medications related to cancer treatment, chemotherapy, certain antibiotics.
Yes, definitely certain antibiotics. I'm trying to think of, I want to say it's one of the fluoroquinolones, I want to say. I can't remember, but I remember that was like a auxiliary label on people, but I've never actually had anybody in my 20 years of practice come back and tell me that they had it from there. So to me, that's super interesting. What about when you see these products over the counter that never, ever, ever work, that I don't even know what it's called, but I remember there was one, it was in like a burgundy color box. And I think it was all B vitamins. So is there any truth to that, that B vitamins help?
I would say there's slight evidence that certain herbal supplements can help, but overall, there's no FDA-approved herbal supplement. Amongst professionals, amongst, specialists, we have seen that for tinnitus patients who have trouble with sleep, that certain kinds of magnesium can help them sleep. Therefore, that has an indirect, impact on tinnitus. So that would be sort of approved by many specialists in our field to consider that. But the herbal supplement concoctions are not evidence-based. They could work for some, but for most, they are a waste of money. And it's either they don't work or it's very hard to tell if the reason you're getting better is because of that. So unfortunately, they seem to be mostly placebo.
I
And just
agree.
a word of reminder that they're not FDA regulated, so any company tomorrow could just create some. They're essentially treated as a food, so any company tomorrow could create these herbal supplements and label them for tinnitus or migraine or whatever, and there's really no regulation there. It's kind of ridiculous how that works.
It's absurd. I've spent my whole career telling people that all of the time, and always vetting companies because ones that do studies that actually like are reputable companies, because like your vitamin C could that says 500 milligrams on the bottle could legit have no vitamin C, and there's nobody that tells anybody, not to do that because there's nobody that regulates it. So it's wild. And the marketing, I think that there, I know of one offhand. I remember we used to stock it on the shelf at the pharmacy, but not like never have I ever heard anybody like say, oh, I took that product and it really helped. Never, never.
How does that work at a pharmacy? Because if you, the pharmacist, are in the store is selling something that you say, hey, that actually doesn't do anything. Like, shouldn't the Rite Aids and CVS and Walgreens of the world take some responsibility here?
You would think so, but I guess the warning label, it says it right on the bottle. So that's kind of what that's the outlook I took as a pharmacist, because obviously I couldn't control what was on the shelf, but my whole outlook was always with supplementation. It says it right on every single bottle. This is not regulated by the FDA, blah, blah, blah. So I always, it was always take it at your own risk. But what I always tried to do, the first half of my career was in corporate, the second half of my career was in like mom and pop pharmacies. So I took it upon myself to kind of educate myself on the good brands that were like the reputable ones that did third party studies that put not garbage fillers in them, that were like good quality supplements, the things that you might pay a little extra money for. But again, not marketing for anything. Hey, this supplement is, just your standard, whatever, but knowing what the good ones are versus the bad ones and just saying use at your own risk. Hey, this might benefit for this, but, nobody's like, unless they're doing a third party study, like there are supplement companies that do that, or even ones that I love that will put their products in, clinical trials, they'll do their own studies and things like that. Those companies are the ones that I would recommend in a heartbeat, even if it's just for something like a methylated B complex or a vitamin C. Just knowing that what is on the label is what is in the bottle. That's half the battle. And then the other half is what fillers and other things are they putting in it? Because again, they're not regulated. So, as a pharmacist, I always took that approach of, kind of which led me to where my career is now, that I did a complete turnaround and don't do pharmacy. I do completely like root cause, but exactly that, saying, what actually is in these products and, are they trustable? But to even answer your question too about, when something's marketed for something, I think it's kind of scary because I think that, what makes that, like you said, that is there a study that's done? Because I've never in my 20-year career have seen somebody say, "Ooh, I took that product and it really helped." Never. So it's wild that people could just slap a label on and call it good, and here we are.
Yeah, unfortunately, it speaks to the desperation of many people who have these health conditions, tinnitus,
100%.
who don't feel like they have many options and really need relief. I have a patient who himself is a pharmacist. He worked with our team and he lives in New York. His name is Steve. Steve is a clinical pharmacist and he developed significant tinnitus. He told me that he said, "Hey Ben, I knew that the herbal supplements weren't going to do anything." He said, "But I was so desperate and I knew they didn't really have any negative side effects, so I took them anyway." And I thought that really spoke to, how much of a problem tinnitus is. If he knew it shouldn't do anything, but he thought, "What do I have to lose? Even if I get a little placebo, I'll take it."
I think it's wild. And I, like I said from the beginning of this chat, it fascinates me because I have seen so many people suffer and it always seems to come in a different package. You know, it always seems to come from like, I can't put my finger on it. And then I really kind of take a special interest in, even if they're coming to me for, you know, five different things. And that's just, oh yeah, and I have this ringing in my ear too. It's kind of like, okay, well, as we're going through different protocols and as we're, you know, working on different things, you know, is anything helping as we go? And I do have another patient right now that is showing some relief, but he always, every time he travels a lot and every time he gets on an airplane, it gets worse. And I don't know how to explain that to him. I'm like, is it an altitude thing? Like, can that be one of the reasons?
If typically no. For most kinds of tinnitus, going in a plane or up a mountain should not change their tinnitus. Flying is safe. If someone has actual structural issues related to their eardrum or the three smallest bones in the human body, the which I actually have right here,
Oh my
if
gosh,
you're on video,
that is so cool.
these are the inner ear ossicles. I got them from a company in Canada. I don't know who they belong to, but
We'll keep it quiet for HIPAA whose ears they are, whose
yeah, I can't
earbones
disclose the
they're.
patient who these are from.
I can't
But
wait to post the video of this. All my audios are on like the platforms, all the platforms, but I do my the videos on social media, so I'm excited to post that so people could
yes,
actually
that'll be
see.
good. So if there's an issue with the physical structures of the ear or the eardrum, then, or pressure in the ear, eustachian tube dysfunction, flying can exacerbate symptoms in that group of patients.
Okay, so that makes sense. So if it does, so if they do notice it when they are flying on a mountain, something like that, then that usually would mean something structurally. So at that point, this is where they need to take action to come to somebody like you where you can help them fix it.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yep. So usually patients early in their journey go to an ENT clinic, get a hearing test. If those patients, could go to a tinnitus specialist early, that would be good. But many patients who we see have already been to ENT clinics. They've waited a month or so and they realize, okay, I'm kind of in trouble here. This is not getting better and it's really bothering me. It's been a month. My ENT doctor didn't have that much to help with. So those are the kinds of patients that would come to one of our clinics. Yeah, getting a full evaluation, a hearing test, plus a recommendation for the tinnitus treatment based on the root causes, or potential medical referrals for certain special conditions. That's where we would go from there.
All right, couple more questions. So what about like our everyday habits that can be affecting our hearing and our hearing loss? How, especially for younger kids, like is there anything that we can be doing there or things to avoid that could be helping to preserve people's hearing so that they don't have this issue later in life?
Absolutely, absolutely. I have some AirPods with me right here, so not blasting AirPods for 8 hours a day in your ears, that's a good way to protect your hearing. Working around power tools, construction equipment, shooting guns, wearing earplugs and or ear muffs over the ears, that's important. If we lose hearing, we don't get it back. So it is one of those things where we need to protect it as much as possible. And going to concerts, live music, things of that sort, that's where you can protect your hearing with certain earplugs, and that's what you need to do. Another component here, and this is not obvious, but I think it's really, really key, is that healthy hearing is an often overlooked pillar of healthy aging. So for patients who are 50, 60, 70 years old, for individuals listening or their family, it's been documented that hearing loss can be linked to cognitive decline and dementia. So research studied what are the in 2020, there was a commission that looked at, okay, can we, this was a well-funded study, how can we prevent dementia and what are the risk factors for cognitive decline? And it turns out that hearing loss was one of the top, modifiable risk factors for dementia, meaning if someone has hearing loss, they have an option of having hearing loss treatment so they can hear better all the time, or just saying, I don't need hearing treatment. I don't need hearing devices. I'm just going to live with my hearing loss. That was a clear differentiation. The group that treated hearing loss significantly reduced their risk of cognitive decline. So through measured tests of cognition. So super important. People would overlook that. It's not obvious. But in my experience, the one of the biggest motivators for patients who are 50 and older is they want to have a healthy brain for as long as they live. They don't want dementia, and protecting against that as much as possible is key. People are really motivated by it. So part of my mission is to spread this message about longevity, wellness, and the role of the ears and hearing well.
So what would you suggest to these people? I mean, you just mentioned some of them, but like, let's just say someone over 50 is noticing hearing changes, and whether it's and a lot of times it's actually quite frightening how many people come with cognitive, we can call it brain fog, we can call it cognitive decline, we can call it memory loss, we can pretend it's perimenopause, we can, all these things that are going on, but it's alarming the things that people come to me with when they are experiencing this, and at earlier and early ages too, like yes, in their late 40s, 50s, what can people do to help preserve this?
Yeah. Well, some of the tips from the research were social connection, diet and exercise, and also hearing well. Those were some of the sort of low-hanging fruit of things you can do, behaviors you can change. And for hearing, it's first identify, is there a problem? Do you actually have a hearing loss? So going to an audiology clinic like ours, a Tribal Health or a similar one, and getting a hearing test, and then having a specialist say, here's where your results are, pass, fail, what level of hearing loss do you have? How bad is it? Are you a candidate for treatment at this point? And then if you are, a lot of hearing treatment actually has like a risk-free trial period. So people can get hearing aids, for example, or hearing loss treatment, and they can see how much better do they hear? How does it feel? And then it's an individual decision of, okay, this is good for my brain. Here's what it's like to hear better. Here's maybe a cost involved, depending if there's a cost. And then the decision is complete. Then it's informed consent, and the decision's totally in the patient's hands of what they want to do.
That's great. So when I'm working with people, and also just to kind of even like circle back around and wrap up, and like I want you to tell people how they can get in touch with you. And of course, in the show notes, there'll be ways that they can connect with you and Tribal Health. But when I'm working with my patients, I want to be a better clinician. I want to be the best clinician that I can be. And I always, I stay in my lane. And when I know I can do something and I can't do something. So if I have a patient and they're suffering from this, where, if they wanted to start to work with you at Tribal Health, how can they get connected with you?
Yeah, so if anyone listening knows someone or themselves need help for tinnitus, what we do is we offer a free Zoom consultation. So potentially similar to your practice, patients can reach out, they can speak to a specialist and understand what options are there for their treatment. Okay, I have these different tools or techniques that are available, these different protocols that I could follow. Does that include a medical device? Does that include professional coaching or, counseling sessions? What all is recommended for to get better? So starting with a Zoom consultation, a free telehealth consultation, and then we can give a specific recommendation for the patient from there through various treatment options. Also for patients who were, or for individuals listening who are just sort of curious and wanted to, you know, take a next step, we created tinnituskiz.com, and it's a way to answer some questions so that we can better understand your symptoms and what you're going through, and then we recommend a next step from there. And that's called tinnituskiz.com. Takes a few minutes and gives you a next step, whatever that may be.
That's awesome. So we'll have to put all that in the show notes. But two more questions. So if somebody, I have clients all across the country, is this, are people able to do this virtual? Are they able to set everything up and do this online, or do they need to come in person?
We can do all this virtually, and we've done that over 2,500 times in the last 4 years of helping really thousands of people through the treatment process. So it can happen via telehealth, or if you're in the area of one of our in-person clinics, which you can find on our website, tribalhealth.com, then please come in person.
All right, that is awesome. And then what's the best way for people to get in touch? Is that the best way, tribalhealth.com, or should they take the quiz? What's the best way to connect,
Yeah,
to get started, I should say?
taking the quiz would be a great first step. So tinnituskiz.com. And then if you wanted to speak with a specialist on my team, someone who really understands tinnitus, then schedule a free telehealth consultation through our website.
All right, that is awesome. Thank you so much for being on today, Dr. Ben. All of this information was so helpful for a topic that really it fascinates me. And I think just knowing those five, pillars is so helpful for people to even kind of narrow it down for themselves, to just kind of take a self audit, like, hey, am I taking any of these medications? Hey, am I exposed to any of these things with hearing loss or just age in general, with declining hearing? But I think, just to get people on the right path, I didn't even know you existed before this conversation. So just getting word out there of what you do and that there are root causes and they are treatable is just awesome. So thank you for all of the work that you do.
It's my pleasure. So glad to connect. I think that audiologists like myself, pharmacists like yourself, there's a lot of overlap in ways we can help people through information.
100%. I know that I'm going to be sending people your way. So thank you for all that you're doing. You're amazing.
Appreciate you. Thanks for having me.
Thanks, Dr. Ben.
Thank you so much for listening to the Balanced Wellness Solutions podcast. Please leave a 5-star review if anything in this show spoke to you, or share this show with a friend to spread the word and help others find the balance they may also be searching for. Make sure to follow along with me on LinkedIn or Instagram at Dr. Courtney with a K, Ciccoletti, or check out my website at www.wellness-solutions.co to find out how we can possibly work together. Be well.